One ticket to the drama podcast masquerade, please. All right, I tried something. I tried something. It didn't work. Anyways, this is Dylan with a quick message before our fantastic episode with Tom Pasinka, the Tony-nominated star of Stereophonic. He is absolutely incredible, so insightful, so charming, and you are absolutely going to love him. Of course, you know he plays Peter in the most talked-about play of the season. It just won Best Play at the Tonys. You know, people love to hate the character. They hate to love him. I can say, regardless, we love Tom, and that's all that matters, right? It's about Tom. It's about Tom. Anyways, if you love drama as well, we would absolutely appreciate it if you would check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/thedramapodcast for what we call Drama Plus. We'll get 2 monthly bonus episodes of just Connor and I chatting, as well as be added to our close friends on Instagram where the fun happens behind the scenes. Thank you for all of the support. As I've been mentioning every single week over the last couple of weeks, we have some fun surprises in store for the summer, and this week is one of them. So we hope you enjoy Tom and a little bit of drama. On with the show.
Press play. Curtain up, an hour in. It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
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 Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, I'm on the brink of about to reunite with you in real life.
I know. I'm so excited. I'm so unprepared. I ordered approximately 12 new swimwear items because we're going to Palm Springs on a big gay birthday trip for our friend Isaac. And I cannot wait. I'm scared. I'm scared of the sun, of the heat.
I'm mostly scared of getting sunburned. Yeah, if anything else.
I know. I've heard that it is, like, insane during June, July, August.
And we're so fair-skinned Irishmen, but I think we're going to be okay.
You know, Dylan, I don't even have a base sunburn this summer because I'm so, like, paranoid about my community. But it's going to be so much fun. And we're stopping off in L.A. at the start and end of the trip, which cannot wait. Haven't been there in 5 years.
I know.
It's going to be great. I am missing New York Pride. Which is tough.
I know. Was that a big decision for you? I can't remember.
Not hugely. I'm feeling a little disenchanted by Pride lately. I just feel like it's all these ticketed events. It's nonstop. You don't really know where to go. It doesn't really feel like a very connected experience. So I'm okay to skip this year and do this Palm Springs trip with our besties. So I truly cannot wait.
It'll be nice to relax. It's been a crazy couple of months leading up to the Tonys.
I know. I mean, Dylan, I think since we first saw Stereophonic separately at first, and then you took me when we went the second time, or you were the second time, but it was my first, my life changed forever in many ways. I mean, obsessed is not describe.
I know. And I kept saying to you, I was like, you know, there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of hype. But I knew that it was going to live up to it for you. When seeing Stereophonic, I remember saying to you, I said, there is one person that we need to get from the show.
I know.
And
it happened to be the same week that we recorded with his lovely girlfriend on another episode of our podcast.
I know. The stars aligned completely.
I know, because what a juicy role.
I know. And I can't wait to get into it with him. I'm a little starstruck today by our guest.
I know. I'm ready to talk all things Stereophonic. All things Tom.
Our guest today is in such a good band. A 2024 Tony Award nominated actor for his performance as Peter in Stereophonic on Broadway. He received the Theater World Award and was also decorated with the Drama Desk Ensemble Award alongside his castmates, aka bandmates. Before making his Broadway debut this spring, our talented guest appeared off-Broadway in He Brought Her Back in a Box, Timon of Athens, Henry IV, at Theater for a New Audience, Troilus and Cressida in the Park, Richard II at the Public, The Soldier's Tale at Carnegie Hall, and Torch Song at Second Stage. Regionally, lucky audiences saw him in Ghosts, Father Comes Home from the Wars, Arcadia, Cloud Nine, A Midsummer Night's Dream, and more. He recurs on the television series American Rust and has been seen on FBI, New Amsterdam, and more. Our guest has also appeared on film in The Kill Room and O Canada. You can hear his incredible talent on the cast album for Stereophonic and see him at the Golden Theater through January 5th. Please welcome to Drama, Tom Pasinka!
Hello, hello.
Hey,
hi, Tom.
We are so thrilled to have you on the podcast. Like, truly obsessed with Stereophonic. It's one of those shows where the hype, it was real. It lived up to the hype in a huge way. I'm so excited to talk to you about it today. But Tom, we always like to check in with our guests before we start chit-chatting with you. We're wondering, Are you well?
I am well. I'm glad I have a day off. This is my day off, so I'm glad that I can rest. You know, the past 6 weeks have been so wild and insane. You know, just going to luncheons and awards, and it's like everything you've ever dreamed of, but it's also exhausting, you know, because it's like there are some people, I was talking to some actors from shows that are closed, you know, who are doing all the Tony stuff. And I'm like, in some ways I really envy you because you can just come and do this stuff and then go home and sleep. but we had to do the show, which is over 3 hours long every night and then two times a day on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And I was just like, okay, this is a second full-time job campaigning for the Tonys. But it all worked out. So I'm glad to have a day of rest. And this is really my first day where I, you know, because Tonys were last Sunday. So,
well, I'm honored that you're spending it with us. And it really does mean a lot. I'm curious, what does a day off mean for a Tony-nominated rock star, so to speak?
It means, like, doing some laundry, taking out the garbage, trying to tidy up the house, trying to get some naps in. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty normal. I think I'm longing for a sense of normalcy now after the last month, because everything has felt so abnormal. I think I just need to get my feet back on the ground. And, you know, Kara was outside playing with the dog, and we live up in Connecticut, so we have a yard, and we have, you know, we live in kind of a suburban life, so try to keep it as plain Jane as possible.
Totally. Wait, that's so fun. I know, I saw you and your dog actually in the theater district in between shows, like in the last month or so, because you can't go home when you have that. But how long is the commute?
With traffic, sometimes getting into the city, it's like 2 hours.
Oh, shoot.
But usually without traffic, it's like 57 minutes.
Oh.
So it's really not that bad. It's like kind of a little bit like 10 minutes longer than my commute was to Brooklyn on the subway. So I know, it's not bad at all.
It's funny how New York works like that.
Yeah.
For our listeners who didn't hear the episode of our podcast that we did with Kara, can you remind me how the two of you met? She's currently starring as Hermione Granger in Cursed Child on Broadway, but
yeah,
you want to share the story?
Yeah, so we were doing, I'd known of Kara for years. I had seen her in a production at Tofana, actually, of Measure for Measure, because we both have we've worked there a lot. You know, we have a deep connection to that theater, and I'd seen her in that, and I'd loved her work, and I thought she was a beautiful woman, and I was just like, oh, who's this actress, you know, that I've never seen or heard of before? And, you know, I googled and did all that stuff and sort of was like, you know, and then like over the years we had like chatted or followed each other on social media, and then we got cast in this workshop of Henry IV, and we were playing husband and wife. And I had texted her, DM'd her or something like, oh, I'm so excited to get to work with you. And then, you know, we met and sort of fell in love and did that whole thing. So, yeah, it was great.
How long has it been then since you guys have been together?
Like, yeah, about a year and a half.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're both on Broadway. I mean, surreal.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it works out so great because our shows are both like two of the longest shows on Broadway. So I get out and then she gets out a little bit later.
Oh,
so okay. I get the car, I drive around, pick her up, we go home, and then we usually drive in together. So it's great.
That's really nice.
Wait, that's so cute.
Yeah.
Do you guys listen to music, podcasts? Like, what is it, like a preparation already for the show on your way in?
On the way in, we usually listen to music. On the way out, we usually just, like, talk about our day and, like, decompress, you know. I think because, like, the shows are so long and the shows are so rigorous, it's a really great way to just decompress. Especially for me, like, playing someone like Peter, I really have to sort of decompress every night and leave him behind and pick him up the next day.
Yeah.
He's not a fun person to live with at home. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I was thinking about Peter as a character and, you know, throughout the awards circuit, I was like, God, Tom really, you know, of the male roles in the show, Tom, you really get to play a juicy, juicy character. There is so much to him.
Yeah.
And it's probably fun to be so complicated and get to scream and but also show that sensitive side. Like, you really get to do it all on stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream role, you know. For years people were like, what's your dream role, you know? And I always had them, especially in like Shakespeare. Like, I was like, oh, I want to play Hamlet one day, or I want to play like Richard II one day, or Richard III. And I think it's easy when you have like, you know, you've done the work that I've done, which is like a lot of classical roles. You kind of tick them off. And then you age out of some, you know, like, I don't know if I'll ever play Romeo, like, maybe a little bit too old, but like, and nor do I really want to play that part anymore. But
you could remember Orlando Bloom did it. Like,
that's true. He did it like in his 40s. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if that was the best, you know, maybe he should have not done that. You know, you have these dream roles and then, but then like, as far as, you know, I think something that Peter taught me is you don't know a dream role until someone writes it, you know. Like, I remember doing it off Broadway and some actress DM'd me and she was like, how does it feel to play the part that every male actor wanted to play? And I was like, feels great. Like, you know, it's like, it's great. You know, I'm not going to fake being humble. It's like, it's amazing to play this role, but it's also difficult, you know, like you have to go to like some dark, deep places every night, and if you don't go there, like, the play doesn't really work. And so it's such a dream to be making my Broadway debut in this part, in this play. It's a type of role that I've always wanted to play, and because I like playing complicated people. You know, we live in an age with like social media and reality TV, and like, I think audiences sometimes have a hard time separating the actor from the part, especially in a live theater environment, because you're in the room with these people. They're not on a screen. And, you know, off Broadway, there were moments where I chose not to come upstairs to the lobby because people would be like, I hated you, or I hate you. And I was still in process, you know, trying to like create the character. And so I needed to set that boundary to sort of protect myself. But at the stage door, like, it still happens. You know, people will say crazy stuff to me and I just have to sort of say, thank you. Mm-hmm. Because it's not me. And like, you may not have liked Peter and that's okay. But I'm also a different person and I'm sort of the vessel through which he's coming to the stage. But I've already left him behind, you know. So.
Yeah. How do you leave him behind? Is it just like when you're, because you wear a wig, you have the costumes, is it part of that process?
Yeah, I think like when I put on the wig, I really feel like, okay, he's here. The jewelry is really important to me because he's from Phoenix and like there's this whole kind of like Southwest vibe that is part of his, you know. I really worked with Enver, our costume designer. It was a really collaborative process on the costumes. And so I was like, can we get a lot of turquoise jewelry? Like, that's what I want. I want a lot of turquoise jewelry. And so I wear this necklace that I'm giving away a bit of a secret, but as if Diana bought me this necklace many, many years ago. And so I take off every night, I take off the necklace and I say goodbye to Peter and then I leave the theater. And so that's sort of how the first step in kind of letting him go.
That's really interesting. Do you wear the necklace throughout the entire duration of the show too?
Yeah. And it really helps me emotionally, you know, especially in the second half of the show when like we're broken up and I'm sort of holding on to this dream of this family with her, this relationship with her, and it's so fractured. I think like, and then in the last moment, so she puts her hand on my, I put her hand on my chest and it's like right there. And then sometimes like when she leaves, like I'll hold it. And it's just easier for me to connect to the emotional moment of that when I sort of, instead of like pumping it up, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's really insightful. So much that's been said about the show, even on our show between Connor and I, about Stereophonic, that is that it feels like you're a fly on the wall during this piece and that you're just watching life happen and unfold. And was that sort of an intentional, I mean, I'm sure that's the way that the script is written, but with the direction, is that sort of the way that you all were sort of guided? Is it just sort of be like you're having conversations?
Yeah, I mean, working with Daniel Aukin has been one of the most incredible experiences of my life as an artist. You know, you work on projects and there's been a few directors I've worked with multiple times, but usually it's for the first time. And so there's always that sort of period of like, is this going to work? Is this collaboration going to be fruitful? Is this going to be artistically fulfilling? Or am I just going to be sort of like a puppet, you know, being told what to do? And I've worked with those directors that, and that's fine. Like, I get in that mindset. I'm like, okay, that's what I'm getting. So like, I'll adjust accordingly so I don't lose my mind. Because I, you know, I signed on for the job. And so it's always fun to sort of figure out like, well, what's the process going to be like? And with Daniel, from day one, it was just such a fruitful process. You know, he's really technical, but he's also really, he gives you a lot of freedom. So what he'll do is he'll let you sort of do it and do it over and over and over again and find it for yourself. And then he'll come in and be really technical about it. Like, don't move on that line. Or, like, you all have to look at this person on that line. He really talks about it being like a documentary on stage. And so it was really filmic. Like, he thinks of the stage as a wide shot in a film. And you can direct and live audiences view to different people by having someone move and everyone be still, or having two people move or two people look at the same time. So it's all very calculated. And then through that, it all seems kind of improvised. It's kind of this mm-hmm. directorial magic trick. And I'm so, so happy that he won his Tony Award, because that guy is the real deal. Like, I would follow that guy. He's like the general. Like, I would follow him into like a battlefield. You know, he just is amazing. And I hope to work with him many, 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 many times.
I'll bet. His speech was one of my favorite parts of the night. Just explaining, like, a room within a room within a room. Like, yeah. That, it's like, all of a sudden things were clicking for me that he was able to speak to it in such a brilliant way. And, I mean, I can only imagine what it was like working through all of it. Because you were part of this, you auditioned pre-pandemic, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I auditioned, that's a crazy story. So I got this audition for this play Stereophonic, and I had never read it and I'd never heard of it. You know, apparently like everyone knew about this play, and like for some reason I didn't know about it. My first year of drama school, David Adjemi did a production of his Marie Antoinette up at Yale Rep. And I saw it as a student. And Marin Ireland was played Marie, and it was like a great collection of actors. David Greenspan was in it, and it was amazing.
Wow.
And it was such a great play, and so very different from Stereophonic. Like, all of David's other work is so different from Stereophonic. And I was about to leave drama school. Like, I didn't think I was going to be there. I didn't want to be there anymore. I wasn't having a good time. And I saw that play, and I was like, I have a place in the theater. Like, if there's a writer like that, I have a place in the theater.
Wow.
And so the day Broadway shut down, I had an audition for, it was supposed to be a production at Second Stage on Broadway. And that was supposed to be the first production of Stereophonic. And I went in the room and I had an audition to play Reg and Grover. And I auditioned for both those parts, but because everything was so insane, my mind was everywhere else but the audition, and it was terrible. Like, I thought, like, it was horrible, and I wasn't focused, and I just was like messing it all up. And it was the only time I've ever called my agent afterwards and was like, can I send them a tape? Can I do it again and send them a tape? And so I did, and I sent them a tape. And I had James Bundy, who runs Yale Rep, email David Adjemi, because I was like, I want to be in this play. Mm-hmm. And like, then it was the pandemic. Like, literally that day, it was the pandemic. And it went away. And I was like, well, this will never happen. And then last year, it came back around. And I auditioned for Peter and got the part.
Thank goodness.
That's crazy. So in the years in between, were you like thinking on it and you were like, you know, I'd rather do a Peter audition this time? Or how did that work out?
No, they just asked me to audition for Peter. It wasn't a role. It wasn't, you know, I had read it. I, you know, you get an audition and it's like so quick that you can't really spend a lot of time with the script sometimes. It's just like, okay, like, yeah, I'll read some of the scenes and I'll sort of get the arc. And so I didn't really focus too much on Peter. And then they came back around and it was just only to audition for Peter. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, okay, let me take a look at this character. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, I know this guy. And I think that's why for so long when like I would get people in the audience like jeering at me or like so upset with Peter or like so crazed about his behavior, I was just like, I get this guy. Mm-hmm. Like he feels very human to me. And like, yeah, he may have some bad behavior, but like he seems very like I understand him in a way that I always have since I read the script. And I remember Daniel taking me into like a side room, maybe like the second day of rehearsal. And he was just like, I just want to let you know that a lot of people are going to hate Peter and a lot of people are going to have a problem with Peter. And I never even thought about it. I was like, it's a play. Like, it's just a play. Like, it's make believe. But I'm glad he said that because it prepared me.
The audience reaction is so overwhelmingly positive for the show in general that I'm sad that Peter sort of gets like the negative, you know, rap at times. And I have to be honest, I kind of was like understanding that art has a cost, you know, at times, and that he just wants this amazing product. But I remember also kind of thinking like, oh, he could talk to Diana a little nicer at times, you know,
of course.
But sometimes there's just these, you have these blinders on. It's sort of like, even like George Seurat in Sunday in the Park, or, you know, there's these great artists that sometimes that's like just what their focus is and it's at any cost.
Of course. And I think like, it's so funny, like, I think because I'm inside of it, I have such love and empathy for my character, right? Because I have to, and I have to defend my character, right? But a part of me as an actor, when people, you know, yesterday at the matinee, like a guy in the audience, like I said, you know, she comes in and she asks, like, Grover says, like, I think it sounds great. And like Charlie says, it sounds amazing. And she goes, what do you think, Peter? And I say, it's really good. And this guy in the front row just whispered, asshole. And... And like, part of me loves that. Like, part of me loves it. Because I'm like, you are sitting in a theater. You're in the front row. You know that that I can hear you, right? But you are so taken and so affected that you have thrown all your manners out the window to call me an asshole on stage. And like, I'm like, yeah, I got you. Like, I did my job, right? I'm showing you someone that, like, you might not want to be in the room with right now. And, like, for me, that's, like, artistic. That is, like, what art is supposed to be. It's supposed to be so affecting that it's, like, you are so uncomfortable right now that, like, it hits something real inside of you. Mm. Like, it's not nice to hear that, right? But, like, it's also, like, as the actor, I'm like, yeah, cool. Like, I got you. And like, I'm doing my job well.
Yeah,
totally.
The audience is so dropped in. I forget exactly what the moment was, but Dylan, maybe you remember. It was in act two for sure, but everyone is just so focused. There was this Grover moment that someone in the crowd, it was like a Friday night show, someone yells, come on, Grover. When yeah. He like, maybe he like had a little confidence or something, yeah. But
yeah.
People are just in it. They are in it in a way that I have not experienced when watching a play in a really long time. So congratulations to you all,
yeah.
For sure. Do you have a favorite moment that you look forward to doing every single night or afternoon?
You know, I've been saying, like, off-Broadway, I was so nervous to play the music. Like, my hands would shake, and, like, I would drop out of songs. Like, I was so nervous. I would have, like a borderline panic attack every night playing Masquerade. Like, it was just really hard because I was like, I'd played guitar for 5 years, but like plateaued very, very quickly. You know, I'm more of a singer. Like, I was always more of a singer, and like, I just wanted to have the ability to sort of accompany myself on a guitar and play chords and stuff. And so that's kind of what I did. I knew like 12 chords and then I just stopped like learning anything. But playing that riff every night is like, I mean, I can do it in my sleep now, but like at the beginning, it was very, very, because it's one thing to play it in my apartment. It's another thing to like have the adrenaline of being on stage and playing it in front of an audience. And so I dreaded playing the music off Broadway, even to the very, very end of the run. But now I love playing the music because I feel like a rock star. And like, that's, you know, I think so many actors are like frustrated rock stars. And so, and I know I am, like, I love the idea of like being a rock star. So now that I actually get to be one, it's like, enjoy it, have fun, you know, and I can finally, technically, I have the ability now where I can actually have fun playing the songs. And so that's kind of what I look forward to now. But there's so many moments. Like that big long scene with Diana It's like it's like a 20-minute scene. I love playing that every night because it's just so, it changes every night, and it's just really, it's like a tennis match, and it's really, really fun.
Yeah. I'm quite partial to the scene between you and the guys. I think it's right after the houseboat scene, and you get a little upset at the end and feel a little rejected, and you go home and eat pasta, that whole...
Yeah. Yeah, that is Houseboat. That's Houseboat Wars, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, that scene is so fun because it's the only time I'm just with the guys in the band. Like, it's Peter's attempt to try to be their friend. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's the first kind of chink in the armor where it's like, oh, you don't want to be my friend. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's the first moment where I think he feels, like, some rejection from the other band members. But it's also really fun because it's a funny scene. And, like, there's so few moments where I get to just be funny and, like, have fun in the play. So I do always look forward to that because it's just, like... And watching Will do, like, Houseboat Wars is just so funny. Like, we fake crack up every night, but some nights we actually do crack up.
Oh, I could imagine. It's probably hard not to. But hearing it over and over again, you know, some actors talk about, like, the white room, you know, where, like, we're all, like, you'll just all of a sudden go on autopilot. Have you ever had that experience before on stage?
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes, I mean, not to say autopilot, because I feel like that, like, says, like, the quality is going down.
Sure.
But, like, I mean, and I've definitely done that, you know, I've definitely had that. But I do think in a long run, in order to maintain your stamina for an 8-show week, like, you need to find moments to sort of get in a different flow. So you're not sort of, like, pounding at it over and over again. You know, that you can trust that it's in your body and you can trust that the flow is going to be there without you having to, like, go 120% in every single moment. Mm. Because we don't do that in life. You know, I'm not at 120% in life every moment of time. So I think with this show, especially, like, we're just starting to find those moments of relief. So that we can maintain not only a 3+ hour show, but also an 8-show week. We don't want to burn out.
You're so insightful. And I love that you went to Yale. Were you, like, part of, like, the Jeremy O'Harris era, like the Michael Breslin, Patrick Foley type time?
I was a little bit before them.
Okay.
I've known Jeremy for a very long time. We did a play together. We did a drag play together.
Oh.
Where we all played drag queens.
So you've been in drag, Tom.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because they do a drag show every year at the Yale Cabaret. So we would always perform. It was a fun thing to do every year. And then there was a play that someone wrote sort of based on Paris is Burning. And so we did that at the Yale Cabaret, and then we did it in New York in this, like, warehouse in Brooklyn, like, for, like, 4 nights. And Jeremy, I don't know if you know Atu Blanks and Wood.
Yeah.
So Atu played the part at Yale that Jeremy played in Brooklyn because Atu was doing a show at the time and couldn't do it. So Jeremy took his place. And that was before Jeremy had gone to Yale. That was, like, right before he had gone, and it was right after I left. So it was that summer. And so, yeah, so I've known Jeremy for a long time. And I know, and Patrick, I went back to Yale to do Father Comes Home from the Wars, the Susan Laurie Parks play.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I think Patrick and all of them were in their last year there. So I hung out with them when I was there.
It's this cool incubator. Like, a lot of you all are working in New York and doing all these really interesting things. I'm curious about the journey that kind of got you there. I really appreciate your attention to the craft and the way that you've been speaking about Peter, but I want to know, like, where this all began.
Yeah, we got to get into who Tom is.
Yeah, who Tom is.
Yeah.
We borrow a ring of keys from the musical Fun Home because we think, like, oh, maybe you were taking in some art, participating in it. Maybe you were singing in the choir, watching The Sound of Music as a kid, whatever it might be that activated something in you where you thought, oh my God, I need to be involved. Do you feel like you had a ring of keys moment?
Yeah. I mean, I started performing really early. Like, I did like Wizard of Oz in school when I was like 7 or something. It was just very, you know, I loved it. I always loved it. I always loved performing. But I would say, like, the piece of art I remember very distinctly that affected me a lot was I went to my parent, you know, because I grew up in Long Island. So my parents would take me into the city on the tube. We get on the Long Island Railroad. We go into the city and, you know, they took me to see Beauty and the Beast and, like, all the Disney shows. And I was like, okay, you know, this is, I like this. And then I remember they took me to see Les Mis. And that was the moment. Like, that was the moment where I was like, oh, this is, I think, what I want to do or something. Like, I want to perform. I want to be in something like this. I think I always had, I always liked, like, complicated stories and, like, sort of the emotion and, like, the catharsis, you know, of, like, expressing yourself. And, like, Les Mis is, like, this 3 hour plus, like, you know, it's funny that I'm doing, like, a 3 hour plus show on Broadway. It's, like, it's this long sort of, like, epic, you know, about revolution and, like, you know, love and pain and God and, like, you know, it's, like, it's just, yeah, it's just great. And, like, it was the first piece of art I remember seeing and being like, oh, I want to be a part of something like that, you know?
Yeah. And then did you start doing theater in school? Like, did that kind of become your thing?
Yeah, that was always my thing. I mean, I did The Wizard of Oz in school. And then, like, from then on, I, you know, I remember I was, like, trying to learn how to play the trumpet. And I just, like, threw that away. And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And I did a lot of musical theater. And I went to this place called Stars of Tomorrow, which was an after-school sort of theater program. And then I met a kid there named David Rosenblatt, and he was going to this school called Holy Trinity, which is in Hicksville, in Long Island, and it had a theater program. It was a Catholic high school, but it had a theater program. And so, like, instead of gym, you took dance and, like, you took an acting class, and he was going there. And talk about Les Mis, they were doing the first high school production of Les Mis. It was, like, the compressed sort of high school production. And I went to see it because he played Gavroche, and I went to see it. He was a freshman, I think. And I was like, I want to go here. I want to go to this school because they're doing, like, real theater. And my public school didn't really have any sort of, like, they would do a play and a musical or whatever, but at Holy Trinity, they did, like, a dance concert every year, and they did, like, two plays, and they did, like, a musical in the spring. And so, yeah, so then I went there, did a lot of musicals, but that's where I discovered, like, plays. Like, that's, there was a little bookshelf of plays in the acting classroom. And I would go after school and I would just read plays and started doing Shakespeare. They did a Shakespeare production in the fall, and I started doing that, fell in love with that, and that's when I started to be like, oh, maybe I want to, maybe not so much musical theater, but more plays.
Did you have, like, a breakout star moment while there at the school?
I think I had a couple.
Yeah,
I remember we did Two Gentlemen of Verona, and that was, like, my first lead. I played Valentine in that, and so that was, like, the first time I got to be, like, a lead. That was my junior year, and then that same year I played Huck Finn in Big River.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so that was pretty cool, and I loved that. And then my senior year, I did Prospero in The Tempest. Ooh. at like 18, you know, and they put, like, hair extensions in my hair, and it was really weird. But yeah, so I did that. It's funny, News 12 Long Island did, like, a thing on me for the Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. And they got these photos from my high school of me performing, but they put them all in black and white, like, as if I went to to high school in, like, the 80s or something. I was like, what? It makes me look like I'm, like, 50 years old. But yeah, so there was that. And then my senior year, I was really pissed because we had a new theater director come in, like, to run the program. And, you know, they had been doing, like, the first high school production of The Baker's Wife. And, like, like, we did Into the Woods my sophomore year and, like, all this stuff. And then we did Big River. And then this new guy came in and the principal really wanted us to do Grease. And I was just like, that's so lame. Like, why are we doing Grease? But I got cast as Danny, and then it was, like, prime time because then all the popular girls in the school were, like, suddenly taking notice. But it was the spring of our senior year, and I was like, wait, but I can't take advantage of this at all. Like, we're graduating. Like, come on.
So, oh, man. That's really
funny. I would love to see the video of you as Danny Zuko. I feel like you'd pull it off. You got that swagger to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was good. I was a good Danny Zuko. We had a car that came on stage, and I, like, did Grease Lightning in the car, and it was great.
Oh, now, did your production did you sing, like, Alone at the Drive-In, or did you include the song Sandy? Because, you know, some productions change that out.
We sang Alone at the Drive-In.
Wow.
We did
stuck to the text.
We respected. Yeah, I'm thinking about that now. We did all the original stuff. We didn't put anything from the movie in there. Is You're the One That I Want, is that only from the movie?
Oh, you know what?
I think it is.
Maybe. Because we did Grease when we were in 8th grade, which was too young to be doing Grease, to be honest with you. But I think You're the One That I Want was in it, right, Delvin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, for sure.
Oh, okay.
But they added Sandy.
Yeah, they added
Sandy. Yeah, we did Alone at the Drive-In. And I will say this, I've played Danny Zuko 3 times in my life.
Oh.
Also, when I was way too young to do it, I did it in middle school. And we changed her being pregnant to failing out of school.
Wow.
Yeah, Rizzo, yeah.
I mean, still high stakes, for sure.
Yeah, still high stakes.
A little bit different. Yeah. Wow. That's wild. Okay, wait, so it's funny that you've done a lot of these classics over the years as well. And you mentioned that you don't necessarily have a dream role, but because it's yet to be written, of course. But if you had to look back on, like, you know, the journey, like, in between when you were done with college and then made it to Stereophonic on Broadway and everything, is there, like, a highlight of a role that experience was really formative for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I did a production of Ibsen's Ghosts at Williamstown. And I think it was formative in so many ways. Not only just the role, but the experience of doing it. Uma Thurman was going to be doing it. And I had worked at Williamstown the summer before in a very small role. And I had loved the play Ghosts, and I thought it was such a challenge. And I knew the director, and I had reached out to the director and asked if I could have an audition. And she brought me in, and I did the audition, and she was like, I want you to play the... She emailed me, and she's like, I want you to play the part. But, like, Uma has to confirm... Like, you have to do a chemistry test with Uma. And so I went to Telsey, and... You know, I walk in and Uma Thurman sitting there, and we're doing Ibsen together, and it was just very bizarre. But we had such a great instant chemistry. You know, I think sometimes you have so many years, like, you have such imposter syndrome as an actor, and then you work with someone who's, like, very famous, and you work with someone who's, like, very well known, and you've watched your entire life on screen. And then you, like, go with them up to the mountains in the Berkshires, and you're, like, going to their house and, like, reworking on scenes and, you know, and, like, in rehearsal and getting to know them as a human being. And it really helped me to sort of, and I had had much more theater experience than she had had. And she really leaned on me in a really nice way and gave me so much respect as a fellow actor that it really, and it was a hard play, you know, like, it was a difficult play that we had to rehearse in a very short period of time. And I think it just, doing the part, working with her, working with the other actors, working at Williamstown, which was a place that I never thought I would be accepted into, I felt like it was such a fancy place that, you know, and I think that was really formative in giving me a certain level of confidence in myself as an artist, as an actor, to sort of move on from there and believe in myself in a different way.
Wow. Mm. That's really cool. Uma Thurman was very formative for us because we were obsessed with Batman and Robin as children, and her performance as Poison Ivy is high drag.
Yes. I mean, yes, it is. Beyond. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay, wait, so is the O Canada film that you did, the Paul Schrader film?
Okay, so here's the deal. I'm not actually in it because... So I think you probably got it from the Off-Broadway bio because I was going to be doing it.
Yeah.
So I put it in my bio. I got a part in that film in July.
The Richard Gere, Jacob Elordi.
Yes, Uma. Yes. Yes, Uma. And that would have been my third time working with Uma. I didn't even know Uma was going to be in the movie because I did another movie. I did a movie with her called The Kill Room with her and Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Uma and all of those amazing people. And to work with Paul Schrader, I was like, please, like, give it to me. I need, yes, I have a big Taxi Driver poster on my wall. So I got the part, and I got the part in April. I was supposed to shoot in July. I was auditioning for Stereophonic at the time, and then the strike happened.
Oh,
and
they
got a waiver, but the waiver came in so late that it conflicted with Stereophonic. And so it was supposed to be 3 days of shooting, and they fell on our last 3 tech days. And so they couldn't make it work. And it was like going back and forth with my agents, going back and forth with the team, going back and forth. It was a nightmare. And then eventually, like, I had to make a choice. And, you know, in this career, it's like, I got this and I got this, and they're both amazing. And, like, what do I, but I knew, I just knew something about Stereophonic. Like, I was like, I would beat myself up for years if I didn't do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, I did not do O Canada, but I'm excited to see it. And I did learn how to chop wood.
Wow.
Because I was supposed to be chop wood in the movie, and I bought an axe, and I went to a wood yard and got a bunch of stumps and was out in my backyard doing chopping wood, and Kara was filming me because she thought it was very sexy.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
It probably was.
Yeah.
You really committed.
That's awesome.
Were you going to be playing a because I know it's about like Richard Gere looking back on his life, and Jacob Elordi is like a Vietnam. He dodged the draft, right?
Yeah. So the character I was going to play was, there's a part in the film where Jacob Elordi's character is trying to get a job at a university, and his buddy from like back in New York days when he was younger is working up there as a painting professor. It's up in Vermont, and he goes up to visit him at his like log cabin in Vermont. And, you know, and so that's the part I was going to play, is his friend from the day. But the friend is a Vietnam vet.
Okay.
But now he's a painting instructor at a university.
Slash lumberjack.
Yeah. There was a scene where we go into the thing, and I'm chopping wood, and I'm like complaining about my wife and, you know, all that stuff.
Wow. What could have been? Parallel lives.
I can't believe you passed up. I'm not judging you, but to be on set for 3 days with Jacob Elordi would be my dream.
All my scenes were with Jacob.
God. Tom.
I know.
Tom, I don't know. We might need to go into the past and change this.
I know.
It was all worth it, Tom. It was all worth it.
Hey, look. I'm a Tony-nominated actor now. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
And that's a perfect segue, because I was going to ask you, the whole Tony's experience, I mean, it all probably happened. I mean, it was a whirlwind.
Yeah.
When you look back on this last month or so, I mean, was it a dream come true? What was your reaction, first of all, to being nominated?
Yeah, so I was in my bathroom on the morning of the nominations, and I have horrible service in my bathroom. And I think I did this to like protect myself, because I couldn't bear to watch it. Like, I thought people don't like my character enough. Like, people hate my character. I'm not going to get a nomination. Like, they'll get the ones who are funny and likable and whatever. I won't. I thought I deserved a nomination for sure, but I
for
don't.
For sure. Hell yeah.
Yeah. But like, I was like, I don't know, you know, and I was so nervous and I wanted it bad, but I was in the bathroom, like scrolling on the New York Times, like refreshing in my like horrible service, and Kara was in bed and she was like secretly watching it with the sound off, but like, but like she thought I was in the lead actor category, so then she didn't see my name and she was like, oh no, I'm just gonna go back to sleep, and she like went back to sleep, and then I got a text from Will Brill and it just said man, and then you. And I was just like, something might have happened. And that's how I found out. And then I just got my phone just started blowing up. And it was just like that, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
So deserved, Tom. I mean, seriously. Wait, is there a group text of just the actors in Stereophonic?
There's a couple. Yeah, okay. Okay. So the full team one is the full band.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Then the one with just the actors is called Kind of a Nightmare. And then
okay, love.
I'm like on a text thread with Will Butler and Justin Craig that like I think is just the three of us. Okay. And then I think there's other ones that I'm not on.
You got to assume.
Yeah,
you have to assume.
I think,
you know what I mean?
Think Will, Juliana, and Sarah have one. That's just them.
Okay.
They're probably sending each other dank memes. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or things about Donald Sutherland. You know.
Yeah. Or things about rest in peace.
Oh, right.
Rest in peace. So timely.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Did that line get any sort of an applause or anything after that happened?
No, I don't think
Maybe
so.
Maybe just a solemn
moment.
A
moment of silence. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's totally fair.
Sometimes Juliana gets an applause after that speech.
I'd imagine.
Yeah, but she didn't that night. And sometimes I get, I'm trying to think of the places where we get applause sometimes. I sometimes get an applause after I talk about going to eat pasta and, you know.
There was when we saw it,
for
sure.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It was a Friday night. It was rowdy.
I always like when I get that, because I'm like, yeah, I'm funny too.
And relatable. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
So, I need to know, did you have a speech written for if you won the Tony?
Yeah, of course.
Was it one that you've been practicing forever, like you know, back in Wizard of Oz days, like, when I win an award, this is what I'll right. say. Was it kind of like, were you thinking back to then?
No, it was kind of like, I had it on my phone, but then I put it on a card because I think it's so cheesy when people read from their phones.
Same. Oh my God, I hate it. Yeah,
it just feels like an Apple iPhone commercial or something. But so I had it on a card on like some very nice stationery, and it was a list of names. You know, it was like David and Daniel and the cast and, you know, and everybody involved. And then it was just sort of like a button where I was just talking about like that, like the people in your lives who love you. If you're an actor, like so much of being an actor is categorically rejection. You know, it's like you get rejected and you get told no. And that's the most of it for a long time. And you have a lot of low lows, you know, and I've experienced in my like a lot of depression and a lot of mental health struggles. And my parents have been there and the love of my friends and, you know, they see you at the lowest of lows, but keep them around because when the highs of highs come, they'll also be there to see those. And that was sort of my speech.
Chills. I love that. That's so much. So good. Thanks for sharing a little.
Of course. Of course.
Oh my gosh, Tom. Well, it's been so nice to get to know you. We're again, up at the end of our time here. Before we say goodbye, we do like to end with a quick dose of drama. This is, you know, something mm-hmm. on your mind that you have been binge watching, you've been reading, you've been taking in, that you want to rant about, rave about, recommend. Could truly be anything. I'm going to start off mine really quick here. And I just have to say, I think I saw the best drag brunch of my life this past weekend. It was at the Spot in Hell's Kitchen. And this is so random. It was at the Spot in Hell's Kitchen. And the drag queens were Jasmine Rice and Zeta Jones, Miss Zeta Jones. And they were so funny, so different, really great together. The crowd was wild. It was lit. And I've seen a lot of drag brunches in my time, but seriously, y'all, if you're looking for one to go to, you know, listeners, if you're like, oh, okay, I'm seeing a matinee or whatever, I want to go see drag brunch before, go to the Spot in Hell's Kitchen. You will not regret it. Literally loved it. Happy Pride. And Dylan Jasmine, of course, was there for our first New York Pride we ever went to years ago. So
very pivotal
character. I told her, I was like, we were there when you were singing Shallow. Yeah. She sings live. Opera singer. Okay, Dylan, dose of drama.
My dose of drama comes directly from Tom's Instagram story from either yesterday or the day before, where he revealed that prominent directors in the New York theater scene said, don't take Stereophonic to Broadway.
Right, I saw that.
Don't take it to Broadway. And it went, and look, here we are now. And I just have to share that for anybody who didn't see Tom's story. Like, you know, sometimes listening to certain people's advice isn't always the way to go. You got to trust in what you truly believe.
I love it. Tom, oh, do God. You have a dose of drama?
I'm trying to think because, you know, Stereophonic is my whole life. I get, but here's what I'll say. This is what I have been watching, which ooh, okay. I have to say,
yeah.
People would assume because I'm doing this show and like I do the things that I do that I love, like watching like really intense TV shows and like whatever, whatever. Probably the only thing that I watch is reality television. I don't really watch anything else because I like to come home and I like to turn my brain off and I like to just watch people doing stuff, usually dating shows, usually like Rome. Like I love The Bachelor. I love, but my favorite summer activity is Love Island UK. Love Island UK.
The best. Love Island
UK is like my summer activity. I watch it every night. It's like been a couple years now of doing that. And so the new season came out like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So I've been catching up on that. And Kara puts up with it. She really yeah. does. Because yeah. she, before me, she was not into reality TV. And now she has seen more reality TV for a lifetime. So.
Now, the most recent UK series I saw was Ekin-Su and Davide.
Yeah, but that was the best season. That was the best season, the best relationship. So you're a liar, you're an actress. She was at the Tonys. She was at the Tonys.
I know. What? Why?
Did you
meet
her? I have no clue, but I saw pictures of her, and I was like, I wanted to see her, I wanted to meet her, and I wanted to say, you are a liar, you're an actress. At the Tonys. But I didn't see her there.
She's an absolute icon. I feel like she's like reality royalty at this point. She did The Traitors then, and
yeah, although not to blow up her spot, you got to Google Ekin-Su before plastic surgery and you will be in shock.
Really?
Okay, yeah. I'm going to check that.
Yeah. Wow, well, she did spend a lot of time in Turkey, right? Isn't that like where her whole fame was all from?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's where she gets it cheap. I mean,
good discounts. Anyways, well, Tom, I'm with you. I need to get started on the new UK Love Island. Yeah. Although I heard USA is really good this year, which it, I guess, never has been.
So. I've seen USA, but I might actually switch over to USA because this UK... when I watch a reality show, I usually go, there's a moment where I turn to Kara and I go, I'm in. Yeah. And it took a really long time. I'm in, but it took a really long time for this one. So I don't know. Mm. We'll see.
Okay.
Interesting.
Good to know.
Well,
good to know.
I'm going to have to watch some Love Island. It's a summer classic at this point. Tom, thank you so much for joining us on the pod. We're obsessed with Stereophonic. Congratulations on everything that's come with this experience. And thank you for giving us Peter, because you are so cool and so great in the role. And love you or hate you, people need to respect the craft and the character and how hard you're working up there. So, and we can see you through January 5th, right?
Yep.
Love it. Oh my God. And I also, everyone needs to stream the album or buy it, whatever format you do it, because it's amazing.
Yeah.
Literally obsessed.
And of course, everyone should follow you on Instagram. You're at tom.pasinka.
That's right.
Love it.
All right. And while everyone's following Tom, they got to follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Be sure to rate, review, all of that good stuff. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.
Drama.